time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B. has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, I love to speak about anything nature, and I've got a cool topic today. Today it's all about migration. I'm going to teach you all about why animals migrate, how animals migrate, but I am going to tell you some of the coolest migration stories. Well, the first thing, and here's your trivia question, what is the number one reason why animals migrate? And the survey says, most people would say, animals migrate because it's too cold, and that is not correct. The two main reasons why animals migrate, number one is because of lack of food, and I always describe it this way. If your refrigerator went like running down the street, well, you'd go after it. Well, there's no food around here. You're going to have to go somewhere else. So animals, when they lose their food source, they've got to go somewhere else, henceforth migration. And the second reason why animals migrate is it's a better place for them to raise their young. It's a better place to reproduce. So they're heading out to other places. If we're talking United States, we're going to be talking about southern United States and then actually into Central and South America. And we know this across the world, and I know many listeners are from around the world. You find your neck of the woods, so to speak, and where animals migrate to. This show was brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Now let's talk about, well, what triggers migration? What tells an animal it's time to go? In other words, get up and go now. The first thing is photo period. Photo, like you're taking a photograph. If you don't know, photo means light. So photo period. If you think about in the early fall when time is changing and it just changes real quick, the photo period, it just tells an animal, get up and go. And some animals literally just like, it is time, and I'll get to a specific animal in a little bit with their trigger, and just get up and go. The second one with the trigger, now it's temperature. Now think about how cool this is. Robins, there's temperature that says robins go migrate. But not all robins migrate. You know, it's funny. Many people always say to me, hey, you know, I saw my first robin. It must be springtime. Well, guess what? Some of those robins happen to be winter robins. We see flocks of winter robins that never migrate. Well, let's go back to the first thing. There's still enough food for some of the robins to be here and they stay. Other robins, because of that factor, they get up and they go. So let's talk about a number of animals that migrate. First one, let's talk birds. And I'm going to give you a couple cool, I guess, cool ones. But the best one I can tell you is, it's about the broadwing hawk. And the broadwing hawk migration is this. We always look for the first cold front that passes through around September 15th. What we do is we look for that cold front, and as soon as the cold front passes through, that's the trigger for migration for broadwing hawks. If you look at other birds of prey, other raptors that migrate, they will sometimes take their group, their species, red tails, whatever it is, it will take probably approximately a month to 2 months to get somewhere. But this is the only group of hawks that says, let's go now. And when I say now, going over my home in a 1 week period, I'll have 10 to 15,000 broadwing hawks. That's pretty neat. Well, you say, well, how do they get there? Like, where are they going? It's like this. They are looking for these air currents that are either going south or southwest. Eventually, they need to get south, but they're trying to find one of those currents. And they're going to be looking for, or feeling, I should say, they're going to be looking for these thermals, these warm airs rising. And you know what? When warm air rises, it rises in a spiral. It gets larger and larger going up. And a broadwing hawk will jump into a thermal, rise up, and as he's going up, what happens is he's looking for that south-southwest current, and then all of a sudden, he's gone. And I'm saying it's one of the coolest things. You're looking at a broadwing in your binoculars. He's catching the thermal, and you're going, man, this is up. And he just disappears. Well, something even more amazing than that. When we count, when I'm with the ornithologist, and actually the birders as well, just people that love birds called birders will help out with the count. And think about, you could be at a hawk watch and you could be counting. You can't estimate. You have to find the right number. And you're counting in a thermal. You're counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you're getting up to 50. People go, wow. Well, how about 75? How about 200? How about 500? How about 1,000 birds? And we call it a kettle when the numbers begin to grow. And a kettle, think about this, because it's September, October. It's getting toward Halloween. And you think about a witch stirring her brew in her kettle. And obviously she stirs round and round. And that's what the Broadwings are doing. They're rising on that energy going up the warm air. And that's what they're getting onto. So we say they're in a kettle. But think about this. You're looking at 672 Broadwings and you go, man, this is the coolest. And magically, they're just gone. They found that south current or southwest current. And they just, and I'm saying, they just disappear. It is absolutely one of the cooler things. And you know what's neat? Big NASCAR fan and, you know, Dale Earnhardt Sr., that we'd always talk about Dale, you know, and they'd say, well, he could see the air looking, really, they're discussing about the air that's coming off the backs of other cars. Well, he couldn't see it, but he knew exactly where it was. And the Broadwings, they know exactly where it is. And it's really cool to actually watch them get into that thermal. And let me say this. The warmer the day, so you look for that September 15th date, the warmer the day, well, then more warm air rising, more thermals, greater chance for you to see some great migration going on. I know one scientist, he actually has a party every September 17th. He just says that that is the best day. He's found it the best day. So he and his birder buddies, they go out there. They're counting migration, little barbecue going on. I'm sure a couple of beverages with that barbecue going on. And it is just like, hey, probably one of the greatest days. I haven't gotten my invite to that one yet, but I'm sure that'll happen in time. And while we're on the topic, I mentioned birders. Let me say this. In nature, there's all these other different groups that you can be with, fishermen. And, well, birders happen to be, what I find, two things. The most knowledgeable about their topic, and they love to share their knowledge. You see, there are many groups that have this great knowledge, but they're not the big sharing factor guys. Well, birders happen to love to share their knowledge. And if you just wanted to get into birding, whether it's through migration or backyard birding, and we'll talk quite a bit about that, you just get involved in a birding group. And, I mean, they could have in their spotting scope, they could be looking at, for example, one of those Broadwing hawks. And you have this, you know, not so expensive pair of binoculars, you're trying to get onto it. And a birder will actually say, excuse me, come over here, take a look. And through their $1,000 lens, they will let you look. They will show you how to find the bird. They will then teach you about the bird itself. And all this knowledge is just, I mean, it's just gained by this group of people. So if you do get that opportunity to get out there, that is a great thing. I just want to say that this podcast is brought to you by Tranquility Mountain Backpacks. Have you seen the new Joey B Signature Series backpacks? Go to tranquility.com and look at the Joey B Signature Series, where adventures begin. Now, let me talk to you about another type of migration. And this one is with salmon. And some of you are going to go, well, I've seen on television salmon, and you probably used to grizzly bears and the grizzly bears, you know, swatting at the salmons in a river and all this. But think about this example and how cool this one is. Now, Salmon River, upstate New York, there's a hatchery right on the Salmon River. And you would think, okay, well, salmon are going to swim upstream to where they're going. So I'll get to the end product, but let's start at the beginning here. When the salmon are born there, and the baby, they're called fry, you would think, well, if they swam downstream, they should know exactly where to come back. But when they get large enough, they are actually picked up by a helicopter, flown over to Lake Ontario. They drop them into Lake Ontario. They spend their entire life. It is now their adult life. It is time now to go reproduce. They're going to go back to the exact place where they were born. Well, think about this. They didn't swim downstream, so how do they know exactly where to go upstream? And you know what's really neat? You always hear this word instinct. Well, this really is what instinct is all about. The fish can see a color. You mean color? Well, if you live near some place where it's polluted water, you might see a color, but there's actually colors to water that humans can't see that the salmon can. The salmon also can smell a scent in the water. Once again, if you live near that polluted water, you might have a scent to the water. Well, in a serious sense, they can actually smell the streams, see the colors, and they will go back not only to the same river, but to the exact same, maybe it's a little creek that comes out of it, the exact same place in which they were born. Well, on the Salmon River, that's where they've built the hatchery. And they've built a fish ladder going from the river. There's a ladder, obviously water cascading down it, into this huge vat. And I will see salmon swimming through the river itself. And sometimes, believe it or not, there's some places where it's not even deep water. And you will actually see a salmon like almost like forcing his body, half of the top of his body is out of the water in the shallow water. And he makes his way through. He gets up to that fish ladder. He jumps up the ladder, stair at a time. And he actually jumps right back into the vat where he was born. Now that's amazing migration. But you know something? I just told you about that one. I'm going to tell you about the coolest migration of all time. Think about this one. What happens if, I don't know, listeners right now, whether you're male or female out there, but I'm going to make believe right now that every single one of you happens to instantly be you're a female. You happen to be in your 9th month of pregnancy right now. And I say to you, excuse me, would you do me a favor right now? Wherever you're sitting, would you get up and would you now walk 400 miles? And you're going to be like, what do you mean? I got a 9th month pregnancy. Like I got to go like waddle down the turnpike somewhere or Route 66 somewhere. Yeah. Well, think about this one. Caribou. When the female caribou is in her last month of pregnancy, she is on one side of a frozen mountain, meaning the mountain passes are covered with ice and snow. In her last month, she begins this trek over the mountain. She climbs over the mountain, coming down the other side, getting there, and it's now about a week before she's going to give birth. And you say, well, why does she need to do this? She needs to get to the other side, get down there, and now she needs to cross a river because on the other side of the river is the first grass. The snow and ice has melted, and you could actually see grass. She needs to give birth inside or on that grass. Now, watch how crazy this is. She gets down to that river. The river now is just breaking up, and they're not true icebergs, huge pieces of ice. I call them icebergs, and they're zipping by in the river. Now, the week before you're going to give birth, you now do what I call the caribou paddle. You need to swim across the river and not get hit by a piece of ice. I hear getting hit in the head by a piece of ice like that would probably hurt a lot and get you dead. And get to the other side so you can get to the other side to give birth. Every year, it is so calculated, they get there the week before, they swim across, they get across, and they give birth. I'm telling you, to me, that is probably one of the greatest migration stories. And you know, we have some other cool stories. You know, you always talk about the grazing animals in Africa, and that one really is a cool thing. But before I give you another cool migrating story, let's go back to birds for a little bit and let's talk about how birds navigate. Like, how do they know where to go? Like, I'm going to Central America and I've never been there. Well, people say, oh, that's instinct. Well, there's got to be a couple ways in which we can navigate by to get there. Well, one of them happens to be if you're migrating during the day, that's diurnal, and you're going to use the sun and the angle of it. So they're going to be able to look at the sun, and they're going to be able to, out of the corner of their eyes, see the angle of the sun and know direction. That's pretty neat because, you see, they're trying to do about 400 flight miles a day. So they're looking for good winds, 400 flight miles. And again, we're talking about raptors. You know, the cool thing with raptors is they're not flapping birds. They're soaring birds. So they're using the Earth's energy as, you know, warm air rises and the currents to take them places. So they want to do about 400 miles a day. And they typically don't eat much. They're more concerned about miles than food. But towards the end of the day, they do have to come down. And the word we use when a bird goes to sleep, we say they're going to roost. The bird's got to roost somewhere. So one of the cool things during migration, even if you're not a big birder, look at some of the trees around your house just before dark and you will see many large birds in the trees because they're migrating through. And that's about the time when they're going to go pick up a little meal. So one, maybe Sammy the squirrel, and I joke, but I'm really serious. You need to be careful during this period of time if you happen to have a little dog, because a little dog is a big meal for a raptor. So that's a piece of the puzzle. And going back to the birds migrating, some birds can smell. Not all birds, but some birds, and some birds will use their smell. Now, one of the key things that they have that all wild animals, and yes, you sitting there right now, you happen to be an animal, sorry. Some of you are proud to be called an animal. And you happen to be an animal, and in all animals, there's a magnetic pull. There's, at the origin, at the base of the brain, somewhere near the nose, there is this magnetic pull. When I'm teaching the youth, if I'm ever somewhere, I always say, well, you have magnetic boogers. And what I'm trying to say is somewhere in your nose, there's this magnetism. You know, as humans, we continue to use the GPS units and all this to get us places. So we are using less and less of our, like, really what's ingrained inside of us. And I'll say it this way. I go out in the wild. Do I have a GPS? Well, yeah. Well, you know what? I'd rather use map and compass. I want to continue to use my skills and sort of like what's inside of me and what I can use. Now, going back to birds that navigate, how about sight? They use landmarks. They're going down to Central America, wherever they're going, and while they're going down, they pick out landmarks. They remember them, and on the way back, they use those landmarks because some people say, well, they have bird brains. Well, guess what? Their bird brain's pretty good if they can remember a landmark from season to season. And there are a few birds that migrate at night, and they navigate by the North Star and constellations. Pretty cool. I mean, that's what ancient sailors used to use. And there's one bird, he's not really a hawk. He's called the nighthawk. And the nighthawks, if you're ever sitting by your fireside outside, if you have a fire pit or whatever, and you look up in the sky and it's pitch black and you just keep seeing these things zipping through, they are nighthawks. One of my favorite things, because one of my favorite things in the world to do is sit by a fire at night and looking up at the sky. And it's amazing, not just nighthawks, but how many birds move through at night. And most people say, well, I've never seen them. Well, maybe that's because you never looked for them. But those are the things that birds use to navigate by. But I'm now going to go to another cool migration story. How about the monarch butterfly? And the monarch butterfly, you can ID him by his orange, black, and white. And most people know monarch butterflies and what they look like. One of the problems we have right now is our numbers are down for monarch butterflies. So if you have a little piece of property or a community garden of some sort, or maybe your schoolyard garden, if you're a teacher or parent or student of that school, to grow some milkweed, because monarchs lay their eggs on milkweed. And you go, okay, so what's the importance of that? In the milkweed leaves, there is a toxin, a poison. And you go, all right, well, I shouldn't eat it. Yes, no, you should not eat it. But as the eggs hatch, the larvae come out, and you'd say caterpillars, the larvae. Well, they begin to feed on the leaves, and they get this toxin inside their body. So now, all of a sudden, they're growing in. They've become this mature. They've gone through the whole metamorphosis process, and they are now a mature monarch butterfly. And you see a blue jay zipping along, and he sees a monarch. He goes, man, what a cool look. That's a great meal. Zips down, puts it in his mouth. Well, that toxin that the caterpillar was eating, the monarch, is now inside of his body. And the blue jay gets it in his mouth and spits it out and goes, man, that was disgusting. Well, he's only going to bite into one in his lifetime and leave him alone, because, and then he's going to remember, excuse me, that is not a good meal. So you see, monarchs, number one, before the migration deal we're going to talk about, monarchs had this natural protection. So the word we use in ecology is association. There's an association between the milkweed and the monarch. Well, before I was talking about raptors, you know, these big soaring birds trying to do 400 miles a day. Well, if you're using the Earth's energy as it warm air rises and you're getting on it, you're not personally using a lot of energy. But if you're a monarch butterfly, you have to flap all the way to the Sierra Madre Mountains in Mexico. So think about this. You start up in Vermont or Wisconsin or wherever it is in the country, and you're going to go to a 50 by 50 mile place in Mexico. Well, That's pretty amazing. Sometimes they do catch a little bit of currents, but these are flapping guys. Now, if I said to you, okay, and I know you can't do this, but if I said, okay, I want you to start in Vermont, end up in Mexico, ready, set, go, you'd say, what are you, nuts? Well, think about your little monarch, and you've got to do the same thing. Well, if you're in the Sierra Madre Mountains, and I know many of you growing up, you've seen or read different stories, movies, and like the Alice in Wonderland. Well, you get down there, and in the trees, there are literally millions upon millions of monarchs. Really, really cool. And some branches, smaller branches, will actually break because there are so many monarchs on the branches. Well, there are scientists there from the University of Kansas. And what they're doing is they're looking for all the monarchs that have a little tag on them. And let me explain this. You know about bird banding, where we put a metal band, and I'll do another show on bird banding. Really cool stuff that goes on with that. Well, we actually have these little stickers, and it has an ID number on it. And instead of banding their legs, because if you put something on a monarch's leg, he might have a little bit of a problem flying there. It's a little tiny little sticker. And if you actually, anyone in the country, if you're interested, you contact University of Kansas, and they will actually log you in and give you your own set of tags. And they will actually teach you how to hold the monarch, to tag the monarch with this little sticker decal on the underside of the wing and let him go. And once again, they're down at in the Sierra Madre Mountains, and they're looking for those monarchs. They capture those monarchs, and then they know, let's just play the make-believe that you lived in Minnesota. They know that that monarch started at least in Minnesota. So it gives them, I guess, some data that says, okay, started here, got here. So that goes on all the time. And they will then breed down there. Their young then begin that trip back north. So when you see the monarchs coming back in the springtime, and you could also track, which is pretty cool, like just like anything on the internet, you can track the monarch migration, and that is correspondent to warm temperatures. And as it warms, and you could track their migration to see when the monarchs would make it back to your part of the country. So today I've been able to share with you so many different things about migration, because some of you probably thought, ah, how exciting could it be? Well, let me say, the stories I told you, the science behind it, it is one of the cooler things that's out there, and I just love to get out and enjoy. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure. Joey B's adventure.
That was awesome.